This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the TriDot Podcast, and whoa boy, do we have a hot topic for you today. Zone 2 training is possibly one of the most talked about items on the I Am TriDot Facebook group. Athletes have questions when it comes to doing Zone 2 training correctly. Why do we train in this zone? The first one joining us is TriDot coach and TriDot staff member Matt Bach. Matt is an accomplished athlete with an Ironman Maryland victory and 72nd overall finish in Kona on his resume. He worked on Wall Street as a trader and portfolio manager for 9 years, earned his MBA from Temple University, worked in marketing at UCAN for 2.5 years, and has now found his home as the vice president of marketing for TriDot. And gosh golly, as the vice president of marketing, Matt and I work together an awful lot. Matt, good to see your face. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back. It's been a while.
Our second coach joining us today is TriDot coach Brady Hoover. Brady is from Newburyport, Massachusetts, and he has been training with TriDot since 2018 and coaching with TriDot since 2019. He's a certified functional strength coach, an ACSM certified personal trainer, and also a strength program design specialist. Brady is an Ironman U certified coach, a USA Triathlon certified coach, and a certified running gait analysis. He is a 9-time Boston Marathon qualifier with a 2-hour-and-48-minute marathon PR. Brady, welcome to your first full episode of the TriDot Podcast. I know you've appeared on the cooldown before, giving us a coach cooldown tip, but today you're on the main set in the coach's seat. How does that feel?
Andrew, thanks for having me on. I am so excited. You reached out to me with a topic that's near and dear to my heart, Zone 2 training. I can't preach it enough to my athletes as well as anyone else that wants to talk Zone 2. So really excited to be here.
Well, I am Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation about Zone 2 training, and then wind things down with our cool down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
At the time of this recording, the 2024 Academy Awards ceremony is happening this weekend. Many of you may know it as the Oscars. If you are listening to this podcast episode the Monday it released, the Oscars were literally yesterday. Now, this is one of my favorite TV broadcasts all year. I never miss the Oscars. So in honor of the Oscars, here is my warm-up question for y'all today. If a Hollywood movie were coming out with a triathlon-centered storyline, who is one actor or actress you would love to see in the cast? Matt Bach.
For me, Dwayne Johnson. The guy is all over the place. He is like, you know, professional wrestler. He's into Fast and the Furious stuff. He's in like just all sorts of, you know, Moana is the voice of Moana. Like he's all sort of all over the place in what he does. And, you know, with all those massive muscles, to see him doing a triathlon, especially the swim portion, would just be, I feel like, humbling for him, but also really entertaining. It's kind of reminiscent of like the CrossFit Games. I think it was like 10 years ago and they've probably done it since. They had swimming. So you had all these like brutish guys and gals, yeah, like huge muscles, and they're just muscling their way through the water. And it was like a sight to behold. And so I feel like we'd see a lot of that. My one requirement would be that Dwayne would have to be part of the cast as one of the people doing triathlon training and racing, so that it would give us that entertainment factor.
Brady Hoover, what is this answer for you?
She's being from Massachusetts. I got to go with Kate Bosworth. She grew up in Cohasset, Massachusetts, where my wife grew up. She played a star role in Blue Crush, so she was the first person that popped in my mind.
Right.
We know she can surf. I would love to see her on a bike, and how could she hold up on the run?
The one I got to go with, she is actually nominated for an Academy Award this year, 2024. She's in the Best Supporting Actress race. And that is America Ferrera. She was in Book Movie and got nominated for that, and very deservingly so. And the reason I'm picking America, one, she's a phenomenal actress. I've enjoyed her and her work in several different movies and shows over the years. But she is actually a triathlete. So how cool would it be? She races quite a bit. She's very involved with her local tri club. I think Triathlete Magazine or somebody did a piece on her a few years back, but to have an actress who is amazing on screen in the first place, but then knows how to be a triathlete and how to portray triathlon and talk about triathlon, I think would just add a whole different level of authenticity to it. I don't know if you guys have ever seen like a high school football movie where they have the quarterback dropping back for a pass and you're like, no quarterback at any level throws a football that way, right? And it makes it look so inauthentic. To have an actual triathlete on the screen portraying triathlon, I think would be really valuable. So she is my pick. All right, we're going to throw this question out to you like we always do. I'm curious to hear, is it your favorite actor or actress, or is there somebody that we haven't mentioned today that you would love to see on the screen portraying triathlon? I'm going to throw this question out to the I Am Triad Facebook group. So find my post asking you this question and let us know, what actor or actress would you love to see in a triathlon-based movie?
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
We are over the moon excited to partner with RaceQuest for a new initiative we are calling TriDot Trips. RaceQuest specializes in endurance sport race travel, camps, and experiences, and they will be helping us put on multiple top-notch trips for the TriDot family in 2024 and beyond. At every TriDot trip, you can expect totally rad training opportunities, clinics with our coaches, special guest presentations, and so much more. All set in picturesque, train-cation-worthy destinations. For 2024, we have 5 opportunities to train and race with other TriDotters on the schedule. For 2024, the locations are Boulder, Asheville, Roth, Kona, and Costa Rica. Lots of great stuff. So head to race-quest.com and click on TriDot to check out all of these options. The password for that webpage is TriDot in all capital letters. And of course, reach out to the team at RaceQuest for more information. And by the way, you can reach out to RaceQuest if you are interested in their help to plan the travel for your own triathlon trip as well. All right, zone 2 training. We've titled this episode Slow Down to Speed Up. And this is a question. We get so many questions at TriDot about executing your zone 2 sessions, why we have to train at certain paces in zone 2. That Cindy Reeves from the TriDot support team personally asked me, will you do a zone 2 episode of the TriDot podcast? And so here we are with me on the mic, Coach Matt, Coach Brady in the coaches' seats today to answer this question. So Cindy, thanks so much for letting us know. A lot of people are asking about this. Happy to educate everybody on zone 2. So guys, let's dive into this. Very first question is, what is happening in our bodies when we train at zone 2? Matt Bach.
Yeah, I'm no biologist or scientist or doctor, but I know some key points about what's happening when you are training in zone 2. And one is, zone 2 is kind of known as your aerobic zone. So your body's consuming lots of oxygen. It's using a lower percentage of carbohydrates than it is at higher intensities, and it's using a higher percentage of fat than at higher intensities than usual in order to produce energy. The more that you use your aerobic system, the better your body gets at utilizing your aerobic system. But to a point, which we'll get into that, I'm sure.
Oxygen is the primary driver when you're training on that zone. Our mitochondria, which is the powerhouse of our cells, is actually becoming more efficient. It's become stronger, much like muscle fibers. The mitochondria can multiply due to the stress of, you know, training in zone 2. We get better at utilizing lactic acid, which is a waste product that, you know, our muscles generate when we're training. So that lactic acid can go into the mitochondria, and the mitochondria can use that as energy. We actually become more efficient at that by training in zone 2. As it relates to strength training, things that you'll notice, lower resting heart rate. So as you're moving through some of those squats and deadlifts, the primary driver of that is oxygen, but it also needs carbohydrates and glucose. So your body can actually tap into those glucose stores and use that to help fuel your lifts.
Yeah, and all those things you guys are talking about, like, only happen in zone two. And so that for me, like, I am one, on the run especially, man, I just want to run the pace I want to run. Sometimes I don't want to keep it slow in zone two when TriDot tells me to, but I try to tell myself, hey, you know this from working for TriDot. You know that if you speed up and your heart rate climbs, you will not get what you're supposed to be getting out of this session. Your body just will not do those certain things that Matt and Brady just talked about. So for all my listeners, keep that in mind when you're in zone two running and you got to slow down a little bit to keep the heart rate where it needs to be.
I got one more point to add, Andrew. So, you know, for distance running, really anything 5K and beyond, you know, slow twitch muscle fibers is what, you know, is what we're using and what we're tapping into. And those ones depend, you know, mostly on oxygen for energy.
Yeah.
Our fast twitch muscle fibers that we'll use in like weightlifting and stuff like that, we're still tapping into the slow twitch ones, but those fast twitch ones, you know, those need glucose to energy. So think if you're training for, you know, 10K, a half marathon, a marathon, how important is fueling those slow twitch muscle fibers?
Yeah. No, yeah, incredibly important. Now, we're going to focus most of the rest of the chat on zone two specifically. But before we do, I want to lay a little bit of groundwork talking about all the zones. And we do have a podcast episode where Coach Jeff Raines and Coach Ryan Tibble actually walked us through at high level the purpose of each zone. But just in the context of this conversation about zone two, you know, there's some workouts that athletes are going to get where the whole workout is in zone two, and that's easy enough. There's some workouts that you get where you're in zone two for a little bit, and then you're in zone five for a little bit, then you're in zone three for a little bit, and it kind of hops around the zone. So talk to us about the place that zone two has alongside the other zones in our training sessions. How do all the zones work in harmony as we spend our time training? Matt?
Yeah, one of those key things to know is that zone two is going to help you get faster, but only to a certain degree. And so using those other zones or stoking those other zones to stoke certain energy systems that are anaerobic energy systems and otherwise, then you're going to be reaching a higher maximum than you would if you just did tons and tons of volume in zone two. So that's really one of the biggest keys here is that you need to have the right mix. And that's what TriDot does so beautifully through your optimization is it gives you that right mix for the right time of year for you, given who you are from a genetic perspective, from an age and gender perspective, and allows you to maximize your training by utilizing all of those different energy systems.
So what I like to say to my athletes is zone two, it's essential for endurance. Our oxidative system, which is our main driver, our main energy system, that is strictly, you know, delivered through oxygen. The oxidative system is for that those long duration aerobic activities. Then we have the glycolytic system for moderate duration of activities. And then we have the, I'm going to butcher this word, phosphagen system, which is used for, you know, that's where ATP is used. That's used for immediate and short bursts of energy. Having a stronger mitochondria is also going to allow the athlete, you know, you as the athlete, to recover faster when you're doing those short intervals, allow that ATP to replenish so that it can be used to help you get up that next hill.
And athletes will see in the swim, bike, and run, right, like throughout a week, like you will have workouts that prompt you to use all of those energy systems. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, sometimes even within the same workout, you'll be stoking, you'll be using two, three, four different zones in the same workout. But one interesting thing is that zone two is used in nearly all sessions.
Yeah, it's true.
Because it's either, you know, maybe it's your warm up, maybe it's your cool down, maybe it's the rest in between intervals, or maybe it's for the entirety of your long run. But zone two is a very large portion of what you do because there are so many gains to be had from working that aerobic system.
We find when athletes come to TriDot and they start doing the structured training for the first time, a lot of them struggle with letting the zone two be easy. Why is that transition to adjusting to training in zone two properly so different for athletes to make? Brady, what do you think?
It often, you know, often I'm told it doesn't feel natural to them or it feels too easy. They're looking for that. They feel like they're not making any benefits, right? If they're not sweaty, if they're not out of breath, they feel like they weren't wowed in the workout. It doesn't look good on Strava or Garmin. So they have a hard time holding back. Even when you're in that gray area where you've just kind of crossed over You have a little bit of labored breathing. I mean, that's where a lot of athletes train. They feel comfortable in what I call that gray area, which is no man's land. I mean, it's not fast enough to make adaptations to your other energy systems, nor is it slow enough to make those key adaptations to our aerobic system.
Spot on. Your zone two always feels like it's like, if you look at those ranges, you're gonna look at it and go like, what? Like, that feels like I'm walking. And for many people, it is actually walking. So I remember when I was competing and training heavily, and I looked at my zones, and I was doing a lot of my easy days, quote unquote, between like 6:30 and 7 minute pace per mile. And then I looked at my zone two, and it was like 7:05 to 8 minute pace. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I've been training in zone three this whole time, which, like you said, Brady, is this no man's land, this dead zone that really you aren't training aerobically and getting all the benefits from the aerobic system. But I was training in zone three, which I was thereby taking on a whole bunch of extra stress from that session that was harder to recover from. So then all my other harder sessions that week, I wasn't able to go hard enough and really get the most out of myself. So exactly as you said, Brady, you got to have that be polarized, have it be very separate, so that you're not really doing, I mean, it's a time and place for the zone three stuff, but for the most part, it needs to be polarized so that you're really building the anaerobic systems and building the aerobic system separately and very intentionally.
I say to all my athletes, well, you know, you struggled with that second and that third interval because you were kind of recovering this gray area where you didn't allow that heart rate to come down. I say, you know, your next interval is as good as your last recovery. So usually when I say it that way, they go, That makes sense. If I go a little bit easier in between those intervals, I'm going to get more output. I'm going to be able to hold on to that. My RP is going to go down on those efforts. Yeah, that's really important. I'm going to feel better throughout that workout.
And that's a great reminder, Brady. And it's something that took me a little while as a tryout athlete to really sink in, that within my individual workout, like those keeping it easy in zone two, in between each interval is an investment in the next interval, right? Like, it is ensuring you can do the pace you're supposed to do on interval two, interval three, interval four, when the pace kicks up. And I also started reminding myself on days where tryout's like, hey, go run for 45 minutes in zone two today. And you're like, really? That's it? That's all I'm doing today? Keeping that zone two and keeping that easy is an investment in my tough work that I have tomorrow. Right? Because if I flirt with that zone 2-3 line in that 45-minute easy run, okay, well, tomorrow, tryout's going to kick up the intensity, and I might not be truly ready for it if I didn't let zone 2 the day before be really easy.
If I'm working with an athlete who doesn't have devices, like they don't have a watch, or particularly in the case of zone 2 training, if they don't have a heart rate monitor of some sort, accurate heart rate monitor of some sort, then they will very, very, like almost 10 out of 10 times will find that they're training in zone three, because, and I think maybe it's like spawned out of this no pain, no gain kind of mindset that people often have, where they feel like, exactly like you said before, Brady, if they're not working hard, they're not breaking a sweat, they're not panting, they're too easy to have a conversation, then they feel like they're not having that pain or uncomfort or discomfort and suffering that is going to cause them to be better. But that's just, they need to wipe that out of their brains, because they're probably in that zone three where they're not getting all the benefits that they should be.
This is a question I see frequently from people that are coming into tryout as new athletes. They want to know how their heart rate zones are determined, because tryout gives you a heart rate zone. You might have Garmin telling you this is your heart rate zone. You might have Strava suggesting a heart rate zone. So Brady, talk to me specifically about the zones that tryout gives you as an athlete. How are those generated? How are those determined by tryout?
So those zones are, we do something called a threshold test. So on the run, it would be go out and run a 5K. On the bike, we do something called a functional threshold power test, which is a 20-minute kind of best effort. And what tryout's really looking for is that average heart rate for that effort. But you want to make sure you get in a good warm-up first, right? Because if you just line up and toe the line for your 5K time trial, and you're not warmed up, it is going to be a 3-4 minute delay of a heart rate lag that's going to get calculated. That's going to make your zones, as they set it up, a little bit lower. I want to say I have the percentage.
Do it. Drop that percentage.
Yeah. So tryout uses a range for calculating that. So say the athlete holds 172 heart rate, we'll just say, for that 5K test. You know, that was their average heart rate after their warm up. Generally speaking, that we're going to take 65 to about 86% of that, and that's your zone two heart rate.
And that's going to depend on somebody's age, gender, experience in the sport. There's a bunch of things that will dictate where in that range Tridot pulls from, correct?
Correct. And then what that range is, you know, the top end of my range is 150, but I'm not trying to stay at 149 the whole time. I'm trying to stay in that sweet spot that, you know, Tridot's assigning me, which is, you know, which is about 136. Which, you know, for me, that's depending on the day and the weather, 720 to a 740 pace. You know, that's about 70, 80 seconds slower than I'll actually race a marathon at.
Yeah. 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 And there's some people that are listening that are, they wish that your zone two is their zone four and zone five. And, you know, we're all at different places, guys. We're all at different places in our fitness. I'm not too far off of Brady, but I am a little slower than Brady. That's for sure.
Matt and I have been at this for years. You know, we've been training for years. I've been training since 2011 and really got on the zone two bandwagon in 2019. And that's when I saw my fitness really catapult.
Wow. As usual, I'm the weakest athlete on the podcast today, but that's the way it's supposed to be. So I should be picking the brains of stronger athletes. Matt, talk to me about this. Are our zones the same across the swim, bike, and run, or are our heart rate zones different between the three disciplines? And why is either the case?
They do tend to be different. And what most people will find is that their heart rate can get up higher during the run than it can during the other disciplines. And on the run, for instance, your threshold heart rate might be, let's say, 172, like Brady suggested. On the bike, you might find that your threshold heart rate is 166. Right? It's a bit lower. And you might also find that with your max heart rate, that when you are going super, super hard and your FTP test, for instance, or your all-out 5K, you might find that your max heart rate is higher in the run than it is in the bike. That's typically what people will find. In the swim, it's a little bit hard to measure heart rate in the swim, but it is generally lower than it is when you're running. I think it's roughly in the same ballpark, approximately, of what you see in the bike.
This is totally out of curiosity. Matt, what is the highest and lowest heart rate numbers you've ever measured for yourself during a workout? What's your lowest resting heart rate? What's your highest max heart rate you've ever seen?
Yeah, the lowest resting heart rate I think I've ever seen is 34, maybe? Doctors think I'm dead. There's probably a lot of people listening that have very low heart rates as well, and doctors probably also are like, wait a minute, what's wrong with you? I'm just an endurance athlete. On the other side, the highest max heart rate that I've seen, that I've actually recorded, and I know I must have had a higher one when I was running and racing in high school, because generally your max heart rates and your threshold heart rates are higher when you're younger. And then as you get older, your max heart rate and your threshold heart rates, they come down. The very rough approximation is 220 minus your age, and that measures your max heart rate. When I was competing in 2015 and I raced up at the end of a half marathon, actually, I was running up a hill very, very hard. I ended up hitting 197 at the end of the half marathon. So I was actually quite, it was like a badge of honor almost to be able to hit that high at that point in the race. And I'd never seen that number before on myself.
Yeah, I think I've seen 191, 192, and I think the lowest I've ever seen is the mid-40s. But it's interesting, you're talking about just how it changes as you age. And there's a guy local to me in Dallas-Fort Worth area that I train with a lot. And there was one time we were going for a brick run off the bike on Saturday, and we were both supposed to keep it in zone two per Tridot's 20-minute zone two off the bike. And he's like, okay, so you're 152. That's still zone two for you, is like zone five heart rate for me. Cool. But he's a male in his 50s. And so, yeah, over time, that changes significantly. That just gives you a picture of how it changes over time. You know, somebody 2 decades older than me, my zone two heart rate is his zone five heart rate.
Yeah, and some of it is age dependent, but some of it is also just genetic. I mean, I know a bunch of guys that they barely ever go over 110, 120. And they're not necessarily older. They're like in their 40s. They're pretty young relatively to many. And yet their heart rate just doesn't get up that high. And the max heart rate they've ever seen is like 152, right? Which for me is like everyday stuff.
Brady, highest number you've seen, lowest number you've seen.
So back in about, I want to say it's 2013, ran this race called the Yule Fest 5K, which was a PR for me at the time. Had about a quarter mile to go, and I was pushing the pace, and I got to a point where I was pushing so hard, it's like, it was almost like hitting the red line in a car, where you hit this power band and you get so much power, and then all of a sudden you start slowing down, and you're like, what's happening?
Yeah.
When I looked down at my watch, that was 192. nowadays I can get it up to, you know, 186 on a good day, which, you know, 220 minus my age, I'll be 39 in 2 months. So we'll go with that number is 181. I can still get it past 181, and I can hold it there for quite some time. So a lot of that comes down to, you know, genetics, I think. I, like Matt was saying, alluding to, I have coached folks that, you know, are younger than me and have a lower max heart rate. I've coached female athletes tend to have a higher heart rate from what I've seen in my athletes. So that's why it's important to do these 5K tests to kind of come up with those parameters.
Yes.
So they can be tailored to us, and that's what TriDot does.
I alluded a bit ago to how TriDot workouts, yeah, obviously there's some sessions that are all zone two, and there's some sessions that are some of the workouts in zone two, and some of it is it's zone four, zone five. That's our intervals, right? We have quality intervals thrown in there. Now, when we have a workout with intervals where we're changing zones between two and three and four and five and six, is the purpose of that time in zone two always just to rest you for your next interval? Or are we still making certain physiological adaptations with that zone two in that session the way it is? Matt?
Yeah, not necessarily. So something like a fartlek, which means speed play, is you're kind of toggling your speed from one zone to another, one zone to another. And running in zone two is harder than running in zone one.
Sure,
so
yeah.
If it has you running very intentionally, TriDot is prescribing that you're running in zone two during your recoveries. That's intentional. Run in zone two. Don't run in zone one. Don't run in zone three. Run in zone two. If you really wanted to just recover as much as possible before your next interval, then you would be in zone one. And sometimes that may be prescribed by TriDot because it's very intentional. It wants you to recover as much as possible so that you can really tackle that next interval. But sometimes it's going to drop you down into zone two. And that's also intentional. And that's to continue to develop that aerobic capacity there and continue to layer in a certain type of stress there rather than allowing you to have complete recovery.
Yeah, very interesting. Coach Brady, anything to add there?
Yeah, kind of circling back to how we started this podcast with the, you know, the speedy recovery when you're doing that zone two training. So getting down, you know, we're talking about fartleks, getting that heart rate down. I mean, the more you run in that zone two, the faster it's going to drop, right? The quicker you're going to recover. But then I'll tell my athletes, you know, make sure they're doing those deep belly breaths. Try to relax the body. You only got a 1 minute rest. You know, if we're talking fartleks or decreasing intervals, there's only 1 minute rest. You know, use it wisely. Don't go to zone one, go to zone two. Try to relax. You know, do the head, shoulders, knees, and toes kind of check. Is everything relaxed? You know, those kind of things will tend to get that heart rate to recover faster. Then you'll be up and ready as soon as that buzzer goes off for that next interval.
Yeah, and my coach, John Mayfield, is always telling me, like, the amount of time your zone two intervals are in between the hard intervals is prescribed for a reason. It's not just haphazard so you can catch your breath and then go again. I mean, and like Brady, you just said, sometimes you might have 1 minute in between hard intervals. Sometimes you have two. Sometimes it's 30 seconds. Sometimes it's 20 seconds. Sometimes in a swim, you're just on the wall for 10 seconds and then you're off again. And whatever it is, TriDot has it there for a reason. Because my tendency, I like to, you know what, I'm just going to give myself an extra minute today. And my coach is always staying on me, like, don't do that. Do not do that. You may have wanted that. There's probably a reason you wanted that. Keep those rest intervals, keep those zone two intervals, the duration they are for a reason, because that's part of the prescription and what TriDot knows you need for the adaptations it's looking for. Some athletes, and this transition to my next question, some athletes are familiar with the somewhat famous 80-20 rule of training. There's a book about it. There's people that devote everything they are as an athlete to 80-20 training. I think literally on the I Am TriDot group today, I saw an athlete ask about, is TriDot a form of 80-20 or does TriDot follow something different? When you look at what 80-20 training is, it does sound super similar to what TriDot does in terms of keeping athletes in zone two a majority of the time and letting a certain percentage of your time, or in this case 20, be harder intervals. So I see this question come up frequently, and I know the answer to this, and I think it's super interesting, but I'm giving you guys the chance to talk about it. Is 80 in the same vein as TriDot training, or are they different concepts? Matt Bach.
They're different, but they're the same. They're the same rough ballpark, I guess you could say. But it also, I mean, 80-20, right? That is a very general kind of cookie cutter kind of idea. It's a decent rule of thumb. And there's a reason why there's a decent amount of overlap between what TriDot's going to prescribe that you do and the 80-20 rule, because physiologically it works. That said, 80-20 is very cookie cutter, and it's you should not be doing 80-20 in one phase versus another, or depending on who you are, your age, your gender, your background, your time in the sport, your performance ability, all these different factors play into how much time you should actually be spending in a given zone, or zone two versus other zones. So what you'll find with TriDot is that it's very much shifting all over the place, but around the kind of 80-20, maybe if you wanted to call that a focal point, based off of all those other factors, so that it's truly optimizing your training. And if you just did 80-20 all the time, it wouldn't be optimized. It would just be kind of cookie cutter, right? It would be kind of ignoring all those other factors of what training phase you're in and who you are down to the core.
You know, yeah, 80-20, but it's really 80-10-10, where, you know, 10% is tough and 10% is really hard.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. Just the 80-20 implies easy and hard when there's a lot more nuance to the zones that are out there. So
I think that key takeaway being that, you know, a majority of training is going to be zone two, you know, however you look at it. You know, more than half of your training is going to be in that zone two.
Yeah, a lot of warm-ups, cool-downs, rest in between. Some of your runs are entirely zone two, so it ends up amounting to quite a bit in most cases. But I mean, one thing to point out here is that you're never going to see the opposite. Like, you're never going to see TriDot or hopefully anybody prescribing 80% of your work as intense, you know, zone four, zone five, zone six stuff, and 20% is zone two, because if you're doing that, you're doing it wrong. You're doing just too much intensity and you're going to fall apart or get injured.
Just as coaches, you know, right? When you're working with your athletes and they have that zone two swim coming up, that zone two bike coming up, that zone two run coming up, what advice do you have for staying in zone two? Some people really struggle with this, depending on the discipline. Some people find it easier. I find it easy for some disciplines and hard for others. So just walk us through the things that the pointers you give your athletes on when you're supposed to be in zone two, how to make sure you actually stay in zone two across each discipline. Coach Matt.
Yeah, so much to say on this one and so many different tips on it. So I used to not like zone two for, I think, the same reason that many people don't like it, because you don't feel like you're doing anything. But you need to just release that and understand that you are doing the work that's necessary. You are intentionally doing zone two. And once I kind of accepted that, it liberated me in my mind in so many ways. And I said, okay, well, I will do that. It made it easier for me, because running in zone two or biking in zone two is easier perceived effort wise than it is to do that in zone three. So it allowed me to go out and actually enjoy and not suffer as much and be in as much discomfort during my zone two runs and rides. And so that was nice. But then I also said, okay, well, how can I fill that time? I love running with people. I love riding with people. So I could go and do it in a social fashion, where when you're in zone two, by definition, you can be conversational. So it allows the time to pass much faster. Those easy days go by easier. Another one is you could throw on, this is the time to throw on the Netflix or throw on the,
absolutely,
you know, yeah, the Ironman World Championship special broadcast from each year, or watch a movie or whatever you want to do. Like, that's the time to do it. It's almost impossible for me, and I think most people, if you're doing some sort of structured higher intensity training, to watch something and really actually pay attention to what you're doing. It's also, it could be your time to listen to the TriDot podcast or do many, many other things. I've literally known people to even read or scroll social while they're, you know, doing their zone two, and, you know,
or whatever, play chess
or play chess. Yes. So whatever suits your fancy there, like you can kind of make that time go by very quickly and enjoyably, and even multitask during the zone two stuff. Allow it, like, relish the easy days and relish them for a different reason than the hard days. They're very different.
Coach Brady, what are some of the tangible tidbits you give your athletes to help them stay in zone two?
So I say, let go of pace, let go of power. I have them all with their Garmin or whatever watch or device they're using. I say, when it comes to zone 2 days, don't look at your pace. Just have heart rate on the screen. You know, let go of pace. Somebody said to me, oh, you're a runner. You guys all look miserable out there. And I'm like, what do you mean they look miserable? You know, every runner I see looks like they're suffering out there and they're not happy. I was like, oh, they're definitely not doing right, because they're probably running too hard in that gray area. When I'm running zone two, I got a big old smile on my face. Every once in a while, I do what I call the nose test. You know, can you breathe solely in and out of your nose for, you know, 2 minutes? You know, that's a good test. If you can't breathe in and out of your nose for 2 minutes, that's a good RPE test as well. If you can't, chances are you're kind of in that zone three if you don't have a heart rate monitor to tell you where you're at. I like to tell them, when it comes to that, if you need a controlled environment, jump on a treadmill or get on the bike trainer and put it on what I call set and forget mode, where you set that pace, your heart rate, and you just camp right there. Oh, but coach, that's way too boring. Well, you can play around with your cadence. You can play, you know, bike cadence, run cadence. You can think about your form. You can think about your knee drive. There's a whole slew of things that you can do while you're running in zone two to kind of take away from, you know, just how much time is left on the clock. I truly enjoy it. That's where we get like that runner's high. Yes, it is a thing. We're going to feel that runner's high is, you know, a nice true zone two, where you're going to get done with that run. You're going to feel like you have so much more energy throughout the day, even though you're using energy, you're actually creating more energy. As we go back to that mitochondria, the mitochondria becomes more efficient. It gives us more energy throughout our day to day.
When you have those zone two workouts and try it out, often in the session notes, we'll even say this: you should finish this session feeling like you have gas in the tank.
And some people will call zone two your all day pace.
Yeah.
Like you should feel like you should be able to go run or bike. Yeah. At zone two for a long, long time, because by definition you can, it's like, you know, you should be able to do that all day basically.
Yeah. And a couple of things that really helped me, and Brady, you mentioned one with bringing your workouts inside. There's certain days here in Texas where if I try to do a zone two run or bike outside, I am not going to be able to keep the heart rate in zone two once the summer gets too summery. And so, I mean, the treadmill and the indoor trainer are just such a great way to make sure you're keeping that easy effort easy. It's even easier on your joints, right, in both those scenarios. So I'm a big fan of doing the zone two stuff inside myself, especially where I live in Texas. One of that I post frequently in the Iron Trout Facebook group is people are talking about the swim. A lot of athletes really struggle with swimming in zone two because you're slowing down that swim pace. And if you haven't developed the ability to swim at different paces, which takes time, a lot of people, their legs sink in zone, and so it makes zone two harder than it should be. I actually, when I was fairly new to Tridot, I probably spent the first couple months with a swim buoy, a pull buoy between my legs in zone two. And that helped me keep zone two at the pace that it was supposed to be. Now, you don't want to do that too often or for too long, because that's going to form a bad habit. You need to get your technique, and you need to form the ability to swim in zone two without a pull buoy. But that did help me for a little bit as I was adjusting to the Tridot workouts when I was brand new to the platform myself. And even when I take a break, if I take a long break from swimming and head back to the pool, I'll probably do that for a few sessions. I'll use the pull buoy a little bit more often than I should until I kind of get those gears and those speeds back in my system. And that's the case for the swim, bike, and run. If you're new to Tridot, you're new to structured training, you will learn over time what each zone feels like and get better at running, biking, swimming in different zones. So just stick with it, have patience, and it's a skill you will develop over time. Two more questions here in our main set before we kick it to Vanessa for our coach cooldown tip of the week. If I am walking in zone two, you guys have mentioned already that that's okay, but some folks, if they're doing that every single workout, they're like, I'm not even running ever, I'm just walking all the time. So just, Matt, talk to me a little bit more about the zone two walk. Is that okay if we're doing that every single time? Should we over time get where that is a run? Like just harp on that a little bit extra for us today.
Yeah, that is perfectly fine. That is perfectly normal. And it is especially normal in cases where, let's say you're running up a hill. I mean, for a lot of people, even if you're sort of like a, let's say, middle of the packer, you might find yourself walking up the hill because it's a pretty steep hill and your heart rate is climbing into zone three. And so you need to stop and walk or even continue to walk in zone and stay in zone two as you're walking up that hill because the incline is so steep. But that's it. It is okay to be there. And one thing that you'll notice over time is that as you use that aerobic system, as you are in zone two, your body will get better at using that aerobic system, and you'll get more and more efficient in zone two, so that your walk will become a jog and your jog will become a run over time. You have to be very patient. It is not something for instant gratification. It is something that takes usually months and sometimes even years to really develop that aerobic system to the point where you're, let's say, running in zone two. But you will find that your pace rate relationship to your heart rate is really interesting to watch over time. So you might run at a given pace under a certain set of conditions. I'm talking about like heat and heat, elevation, humidity. And you're running, let's say, 9 minute pace and it's in your zone two. But then over time, you might find that that 9 minute pace creeps down to now it's more like 8:45-ish and 8:30-ish and 8 minute pace, and your zone two will get faster and faster. So one thing I'd actually do is run the same 5 mile loop. And I would precede it with a couple miles of warm up, so I'd get my heart rate up and get things moving. And it's good if it's a relatively flat loop. And so I've picked this flat 5 mile loop, or it's more like an 8 mile loop. But the middle 5 miles, I would run and I would stay in zone two, and I would make sure that that average heart rate was, let's say, 142. And I would see what my pace was. And then I would do that same exact loop another time, let's say 2 months later, after my aerobic system is in theory developed and I'm running at a faster pace given the same heart rate. I would look at it and I'd say, okay, I averaged 142 again for this 5 mile portion. And oh, look, I ran 12 seconds faster per mile. Wow, awesome. It felt good. It was able, it was something else for me to think about too during those zone two runs, and something to focus on and feel like I was appeasing my type A personality without having to go hard.
How many things in our sport are just there to appease our type A personality? Yeah, that's there's several there, but super helpful, Matt. And Brady, I know for you, you are an excellent runner yourself, you know, with multi-time Boston qualifier, I believe. So as you're talking with athletes about this zone two running in particular, you know, what role do you find, you know, run walk to play in certain athletes' plans as they're really getting their legs under them in their run training?
Yeah, I use myself as an example often. I tell them I have to walk sometimes too. I have, when I leave my house, I have two different directions I can go. I can go left or I can go right. If I go left, it's flat and easy. It's, you know, heads down to downtown Newburyport, which is along the water. I think I could run 10 miles and maybe get 200 feet of elevation gain. Or I could go right. Whereas if I run 10 miles, you know, I'm looking at about 600, 650 feet of elevation gain. When I go right, you know, it's, I like to play that game. Like, can I do this hilly course, hilly loop, just running? Oftentimes, no, I can't. Because there is some steep climbs, there are some long climbs where I do have to walk a little bit. Usually I can feel it as my heart rate gets up, you know, close to 150, which is, you know, the top end of my threshold. I try to stay below 145 when I'm going up a hill. If I see it hit 146, I start and walk, because chances are the heart rate's going to catch up. Yep, sure enough, it did, 148, 149. I'm glad I walked, because had I waited until it hit 148, I would have been 151. And then kind of crossing over to that that gray area. We're also improving our flexibility, our body's ability to switch, not only during exercise, but, you know, day in and day out throughout our daily activities, being able to switch between glucose burning or, you know, fat burning.
Metabolic flexibility. Hot dog.
Yes. Yep. So zone two is, you know, it's important for, you know, not only exercise, but also in everyday life. We have a strong mitochondria. I mean, that's what our mitochondria is going to, you know, it's going to keep us healthy. It's, you know, a strong, you know, a good, efficient mitochondria is going to help us fight off disease when, you know, I got little kids and, you know, knock on wood, I haven't been sick where I've been laid out in over a year. And I attribute a lot of that to my zone two training. If I bury myself, yeah, I'm going to be susceptible to illness. So I, you know, try to teach that to my athletes that, hey, you know, kind of look at it, you know, in a larger picture. Don't look at it just the exercise. Look at it as, you know, part of your, you know, your healthy living habits too. We're going to get better there. Athletes that are struggling, you know, I always ask them, did you hydrate before you run? Because hydration is going to play a role in, you know, what your heart does.
Point.
I'll ask them, did you drink coffee before you went out for a run? Because, you know, caffeine is going to increase our heart rate. I had coffee and I, you know, maybe had a half cup of water. Well, there's your problem right there. You know, get a good, I call it the internal bath, where first thing I do is in the morning as I wake up, I put a little pinch of Himalayan sea salt in my water. I drink that and then I have another glass. So I've had 24 ounces. I give myself 15, 20 minutes, throw on my running clothes, lace up the shoes, and out the door I go. If I skip that and I wake up late, I have a harder time controlling that heart rate. So it's, you know, it's being intentional, giving yourself a little bit of preparation time. I know we all want coffee as soon as we wake up, but if we're early morning exercisers, which I know I am, you know, it just tastes that much better when you finish. And that's something that you can look forward to, is that first cup of coffee when you walk through the door.
Your example is spot on. Like, I'm the slowest one on this podcast, but my 5K PR is an 1840, right? And when I was an 1840 5K-er, there were times in my run training where I had to stop and walk, you know? So it's not like a reflection on, oh man, I'm a weaker runner, a slower runner, or this or that. It's no, for the conditions you are running in right now, if your heart rate, which is a true reflection of the effort your body's putting forth, tells you that you are not in zone two anymore, you are now in zone three, you need to stop and walk and let it get down. Don't pause your Garmin. Don't pause your Strava. Put it on the record. It's okay. It's going to show people you're doing the right training right. But when I was, I'm not super in shape right now, but when I was at the top of my game, yeah, there were times out on a run where I'd have to stop and walk to get my heart rate back down to zone two.
And that's going to be the case for everybody. It's okay.
Put the ego aside. It's okay. It's all right. You're getting the gains you're supposed to be getting.
Go slow to go faster.
You got to slow down to speed up, Matt. That's exactly right. And Brady, you said just a minute ago that you will kind of slow yourself down before your heart rate gets into zone three, not like when it's flirting with the high end, because we know heart rate is a delayed response. Your heart rate, as soon as you slow down, it's going to take your heart rate a minute to settle. So I know that there's within the zone. So say somebody's zone, the low end is 130, the high end is 150, right? Where in that zone should we try to keep ourselves in our zone two efforts? Does our body perceive all zone two is the same just so long as we're in there? Talk to me about that kind of strategy. At what point are we putting on the brakes, and how much should we be paying attention to whether we're in the low, middle, or high end of our zone two range? That was a horribly worded question, but we're just gonna leave it to show people that Andrew isn't always silky smooth. Matt Bach, what do you think?
Yeah. So generally, I would say you might want to just kind of go squarely in the center there, kind of have that be your target. But that said, when you're, let's say, very, very fatigued, you're feeling really pretty rough that day, don't feel bad about maybe doing your entire zone two run or ride on the low end of that zone. Use it as an opportunity to be on the low end there, and you're still in your zone. I mean, I think as human beings, we kind of like to think discreetly. We'd like to think black and white pit terms. You're either in zone two or you're not. It does matter where you are in the zone. And generally with my athletes, I'm recommending that they're kind of in the middle of that, but allowing them some of that flexibility and leeway to be on the lower end or the higher end on a given day, just as long as it's not like chronically on the high end of that, because then you're kind of not, I mean, you're still in zone two, but you're kind of flirting with zone three, and it maybe is giving some of that undue stress that you just don't need, and you're not necessarily working your aerobic system the way
so
that you should be.
Technically speaking, zone two is, you know, that's having lactate between 1.7 and 1.9 millimoles. So that would be if we were to test it, you know, within a lab, you know, we're using a 5K test and FTP test to come up with those ranges. So I tell my athletes, like, keep that in mind. We're not testing this in a lab, so it's a range. I want you more in the middle of that range. Where it's okay to be in that upper end is, yeah, if you're going up a hill, but, you know, do your best, you know, walk a little bit, you know, let go of the Strava, you know, the Strava results and all that stuff. Cause, you know, we're focused on race day. And just knowing that, you know, it's a calculation that we're coming up with, you know, if you want to maximize your zone two, it should be somewhere kind of in the middle of that.
One thing that I want to mention is that your heart rates, and I think you know, it's been sort of mildly mentioned on a couple different occasions here, is that conditions impact your heart rate, and not just conditions, but there's a plethora of factors that impact your heart rate. So if you're super tired, your heart rate might be higher, usually higher, sometimes lower, but
great point.
Might be different than what it normally is, especially if after you finish a race, you might notice that it's hard to get your heart rate up, actually. And then sometimes it might be super high and you just can't get it down. So sometimes a race effort like that might whack out your heart rate. Conditions like temperature and humidity will have a direct and sometimes significant impact on your heart rate. So if you're doing a zone two run outside and it's 100 degrees out and humid, your heart rate is going to be elevated relative to what it normally would be. And so your pace will therefore be slower in those types of conditions, sometimes significantly, like tens of seconds per mile slower, sometimes a minute maybe per mile slower. Relative to what might be considered ideal conditions of, let's say, 50 degrees and not very humid and you're at sea level and all that, then the conditions are conducive to you having a faster pace relative to the heart rate, the zone two heart rate.
Yeah, great, great point, Matt. Another thing that can affect it is your lifestyle stress. If work or family is just really stressing you out, that can impact your heart rate and your workouts. You could be about to be sick, right? And not even know yet. You know, your body's starting to fight something that you don't even know you have. And you're like, man, why am I really struggling to keep my heart rate down on today's workout? And then 2 days later, oh man, I have the flu. But there are in TriDot workouts where heart rate doesn't matter. There's certain workouts where we pay attention to our heart rate, and heart rate is the golden rule. And there's workouts where we don't even think about our heart rate. Close us down the day just with a breakdown of how we know the difference.
The primary metric is what you want to be paying attention to on any given workout. And that primary metric, you might see a little heart. And if it is a heart, then it means you should be paying attention to your heart rate and staying in your heart rate zone two or zone whatever it is. If you see a little lightning bolt, it might be referring to your power, whether that be on the bike, which is a more common place to have power, or on the run, which there are things like Stride foot pods. And in the swim, it's generally not going to be referring to heart rate at all, because heart rate is very difficult to look at or capture during a swim. So focus on, and what you'll notice is that generally when you're doing zone two, let's say a zone two workout session that is entirely zone two, like let's say it's a long run on the weekend, then it'll usually be based off of heart rate. The primary metric will be heart rate. And that's why we talked about that so much today. If it's calling for zone two by pace, which is a little clock that you would see, that's the other primary metric that you could need to use, then you want to be focusing on pace. And it doesn't matter what your heart rate is. Your heart rate might have climbed into zone three, or it might still be down in zone one, but your pace, if it's in zone two, then you will get the appropriate credit, let's say, for the session. Your Tranex score will reflect that. But you'll also be working the correct systems or doing the right training right. You'll be doing the session how it's intended to be done.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Hi, friends. I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite-level enthusiasm. And joining us today for the Coach Cooldown Tip is our superhuman TriDot coach, Jason Verbraeken, more fondly known as Verby. If you follow him on the socials, you may notice that he likes the extreme side of things. Full-distance tries are child's play, so extreme races are more up his alley. Verby recently became a Hurt 100 finisher. He is a Norseman X Tri black shirt finisher and also placed second overall in the Starvation X Tri. These kinds of results only happen because of dedication, consistency, and with the heart of a lion. Not only does he exercise these traits in triathlon, but in his 25-year career with Pepsi as an account manager and with his wife and two kids. Welcome to the Cooldown, Verby.
Hello, Vanessa. Hopefully I have as much enthusiasm as you do for this.
Before you started dabbling in the sport of triathlon, you were full on into motocross racing with your son, and you still train professional racers today. So tell us a little bit about this.
Yes, I've always loved motorcycles, anything with an engine where you can go fast.
Right.
Snowmobiles, four-wheelers, all that fun stuff. So when he was five, that darn Santa Claus brought him a motorcycle, and we started riding together and going to the track. And then they had a kids track, and then some parents are, hey, you know, we have kids races the next day and there's beginner classes. And it started, all of a sudden it just was a snowball that turned into a huge blizzard. But it was, he started, we traveled the whole world. He was on Team USA. We did, you know, we loaded up the motorhome and trailer and drove across country. And so we got to see many states, had many crazy adventures on the road. He raced with, like I said, for Team USA and won gold over in Belgium. We won silver in Bulgaria. So it was amazing time that I wouldn't change for a second, just the adventures and the journeys we got to do as a family for, gosh, what was that? Must have been 15 years together doing
it. Well, thank you to Santa Claus. Yeah. Now, I imagine that your tip today is something that applies equally to motocross and to triathlon. So what do you have for us today?
My tip today is knowing your race course. That can help you out so much mentally, physically. all around, you know, knowing where the hills are going to be, knowing where aid stations are going to be. Just even, you know, you get to a new course, especially when you're going long, you're getting tired. And then if you've been to that course before and have maybe just pre-ran the last section or biked the last few miles, so, then when all of a sudden you recognize something that, oh, I know where I am. Okay, yeah, I only have this one little hill to climb, and then it's downhill to the finish. You know, that just can change your spirits completely when you're racing. Just those, you know, just that knowing where you are is huge.
Yeah, I fully agree with you on this one. It makes a big difference to be able to, if you have the opportunity to go on the race course before, arrive a little bit early before the race and maybe drive a portion of the race course, or even if you don't have access to do that, some of the race courses are available on full gas, so you can actually ride some of those race courses, and just get an idea of some landmarks that will help you with those visual cues. And like you said, it's a mental game. Even in professional sports, a lot of these sports psychologists are really big into visualization and incorporating that into the practice of all athletes. And part of that visualization is knowing exactly what your surroundings are going to be.
Oh, totally. And like, I just went and did Hurt 100. Well, yeah. I was lucky enough to, I actually flew out to Hawaii in November. So a couple months before, and I got a, you know, it's five loops, 20 miles. So I got to run the race course and know where things were, know what the terrain was like. And, you know, after doing that, I was like, and seeing how steep some stuff was and how, you know, steep going back downhill was, I'm like, okay, I'm still far enough out. There's a few things I want to change in my training regimen to add some more strength training so the legs are stronger. And, you know, I ended up, I had never used running poles before. And I'm like, oh, well, everywhere I read, that's going to help take a lot of stress off the legs. So I incorporated training with running poles and getting ready for those to use on that course. And then just knowing the different landmarks, like you, you know, we talked about knowing the different landmarks there and knowing kind of where I was. And, you know, I even took pictures, and one of the pictures was of a really rough section, and that was my screensaver on my phone.
Oh, so every awesome.
I would go on to use my phone, I would see that picture and I would start visualizing the course and okay, this is where I'll be at that time. And, you know, just going through those just every day, multiple times a day, seeing part that course and just kind of running through it in my head. When I got back out there, it was like I had done these sections and had gone through it so many times in my head. I felt like it wasn't the first time I was doing the race. Like I felt like a veteran being there. Like I've ran through it so many times, my brain didn't know the difference.
That's incredible. I love that tip of putting that portion of the race course on your phone. I'm very much doing the same thing in preparation for the Nice France bike course. I have the elevation profile where I can see it every single day, just to prepare myself. Like, this is how long you're going to be climbing, and this is how steep it's going to be. And although I don't see the course itself on that elevation profile, it's just, it's a constant reminder that it's going to be difficult and hard. And like you said, you visualize, maybe not visualize the actual setting, but you can also visualize how you're going to feel when you get to this landmark, or how you're going to overcome some of those mental barriers that you might have at that very difficult part. You can start to visualize that just how you're going to deal with it. I think that's really awesome.
Yeah. And then by the time when you get over there, it's going to be, you've gone through it so many times in your head that some of that nervousness is just gone. And even when you're out on the course and it may be hard, you're like, well, I know what's coming up. I've already, you know, I'm sure you're biking the course too in your training rides. So you're going to be like, oh, I already know this. I already know how hard I need to push out. Okay, I've got this. I've gone through this in my head. I've ridden this on the trainer. It's just another day of riding for me.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.